This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
Having just wrapped up October, which is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, this morning on The F Word, we'll be discussing some of the politics behind breast cancer awareness and fundraising, and some problematic trends that we see emerging in these campaigns. So, it'll be a feminist look at what we call pinkwashing and breast cancer awareness. You're listening to The F Word on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Today in the studio, we have Leslie Wilkin, Laura Wood, and myself, Megan Murphy.
Save the Tatas, a website selling t-shirts emblazoned with slogans like Tatas Rock and Friends Don't Let Friends Lose Tatas, emerged a few years ago. The idea behind the business was to raise breast cancer awareness and to donate a portion of sales, though no one knows exactly how much, to breast cancer research. Not only are breast cancer survivors denied the dignity of having their breasts called breasts instead of cheeky tatas, but someone is making money off it. In a breast-obsessed culture, having tatas written across your chest seems much more to do with sex appeal than to do with a deadly illness. Just to set the record straight, there's nothing sexy about cancer. Save the Tatas may be an extreme example, but companies jumping on the breast cancer train is widespread. Some critics have called it pinkwashing. It's the idea that if you stick a pink ribbon on something, the company is by default ethical, regardless of how carcinogenic, toxic, or offensive their product may be. It also reinforces the idea that the best kind of activism is consumer activism, the idea that you can use your purchasing power as a way to be philanthropic. Rather than just making a charitable donation, consumers should buy things like toxic pink toilet paper, for example, so that one nickel from that can be donated to breast cancer awareness or any other cause. Breast cancer seems to have taken a unique spot in the consumer charity phenomena, as it is a disease explicitly linked to women, despite the fact that men actually can get breast cancer. Women's health has been grossly underfunded and under-researched in the past, so in some ways, a shift in the focus to an illness that primarily affects women is a positive thing. However, our culture seems incapable of talking about breasts without sexualizing them. Like the loss of a breast as a sex object, rather than the loss of a woman as a human life, is our primary concern. Additionally, breast cancer falls into that rare category of women's issues that seems to be apolitical. Campaigns around domestic violence, abortion, or sexual health all are very politicized and seem to fall back on the same sexist woman-blaming myths. Out of fear of being labeled a feminist, which is horrifying, I know, many women tend to shy away from issues like these and arguing that women need support and they're actually not to blame for these situations or ailments. But breast cancer is safe, supporting a woman's issue without really having to say anything about women's inequality. Breast cancer is very prevalent, and fundraising awareness and prevention are essential. But is consuming, sexualizing, and depoliticizing a very serious illness the way that we want to go in women's public health?
You're listening to The F Word on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. We have in the studio today Leslie Wilkin, Laura Wood, and myself, Megan Murphy. Please stay tuned. And up next, we'll be interviewing Kim Irish, who is the program director at Breast Cancer Action in San Francisco. She'll be talking to us about the organization, the work they do, and the Think Before You Pink project. Please stay tuned for that.
Dave Zirin, the American sports journalist, social justice activist sports journalist, yes, they do exist, wrote about the abundance of pink on the fields of the National Football League, or the NFL, during the month of November. I used to actually drive down to Detroit and Cleveland from Toronto with my father to watch NFL games when I was a little girl. And one of my first words was touchdown, so I feel like I know a bit of the flavor of the NFL, and I can safely say that I'm pretty sure my feminism wasn't forged in my experience watching the Detroit Lions. Canadian feminist sport journalist Laura Robinson talks about these types of stadiums as multi-million dollar male-only centers. The only time women take the stage is as cheerleaders. Say what you will about the athleticism of a cheerleader, no doubt, but the cheerleading that goes on in men's professional sports is completely demeaning. But of course, like many other female fans, I can find a lot of enjoyment in watching and playing the actual sport of football. So going back to the pink factor, you can see why I may have been a bit skeptical about the NFL making its top focus the fight to end breast cancer. Dave Zirin goes on to explain this sudden interest. The NFL's revenue has peaked, and they are looking for new target markets, i.e. women. How do they plan on doing this? By marketing pink jerseys and NFL sandals and NFL yoga mats. Because women aren't actually interested in watching football, they just want to do yoga on their NFL mat while their boyfriend watches the NFL with a Budweiser on his lap. This $10 million public relations push to encourage women to watch the NFL is alienating and patronizing. Dave Zirin sums it up best with the following quote, "If the NFL really wants to respect female fans, they should ban the cheerleaders, ban the sexist beer commercials, and continue to enforce equity and access for women journalists."
You're listening to The F-Word on Vancouver's Co-op Radio. Today on the show, we are very excited to be speaking with Kim Irish, who is the program director at Breast Cancer Action in San Francisco. Hi, Kim, are you there?
I am.
Hi. Thanks so much for talking with us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So why don't we start off by talking a little bit about the organization, Breast Cancer Action, and maybe you could tell us also a little bit about the Think Before You Pink project.
Yeah, absolutely. So Breast Cancer Action is now in its 20th year. It was founded in 1990 by a group of grassroots female activists in San Francisco who were really frustrated with the lack of information about breast cancer and where the disease came from, how they got it. So they gathered around a kitchen table and decided to form a group, kind of a little bit of a support group, but also very much activist group, to try to figure out a way to get more information. And it really evolved into what it is today, which is a national group, actually, that's across the United States. We have, you know, over 30,000 members. We have members, actually, in a lot of other countries as well. And we focus on advocating for more effective and less toxic breast cancer treatments. We also focus on decreasing involuntary environmental exposures that put people at risk for breast cancer and creating awareness about social inequities, such as political, economic, and racial inequities that lead to disparities in breast cancer outcomes. And related to that, we started our Think Before You Pink campaign in 2002 as a result of the huge amounts of pink ribbons that you see in the market. And, you know, that has continued today. It has gotten, I guess, we've noticed even worse. You know, it was really in response to what we decided to call out pink washers. And we define that term as companies that say that they care about breast cancer by promoting pink ribbon products, but they also manufacture products that are linked to the disease. So a really great example of that is something that we've noticed in the past couple of years are alcohol companies that place pink ribbons on their labels, or they've even turned their beverages pink. We've seen a couple of vodka brands that do that during October to promote breast cancer awareness or to raise money for breast cancer research. But, you know, alcohol is the only proven link between diet and an elevated risk for breast cancer. So it's really just about marketing and trying to appeal to women to buy this alcohol, or to people who, you know, consumers that do care about breast cancer and trying to eliminate it. But, you know, having this product that contributes to the disease is not doing that. It's really just going to be focusing or, profiting from the corporations are going to be the ones profiting from this.
Yeah, it's a pretty frustrating contradiction that's happening there, a lot of hypocrisy going on. I'm glad that you guys are doing this work. Maybe, I wonder if you could talk about a few of the other companies who are involved in this so-called pink washing and breast cancer awareness marketing.
Yeah, definitely. So we, I think a really good example of that is from a couple of years ago. Our Think Before You Pink campaign addressed General Mills, which is the manufacturer of Yoplait yogurt. And we were frustrated and had been, you know, alerted by many of our activist members who were also frustrated by the hypocrisy of Yoplait selling yogurt with pink lids on it. And I think their campaign was titled Save Lids to Save Lives. People were encouraged to, you know, after they buy the yogurt, eat it, they send the lid into Yoplait. And 10 cents for every lid was supposed to be donated to breast cancer research. You know, it's a pretty small amount, and people noted with sort of distaste that a stamp in the U.S. cost, I think, like 37 cents at the time. And so, you know, even the stamp was quite a bit more than the money that that people would be, or sorry, that Yoplait would be spending on breast cancer research. But the thing that really bothered us was that we discovered that in Yoplait yogurt, General Mills was using dairy that had been treated with RBGH, which stands for recombinant bovine growth hormone. It's this artificial growth hormone that's given to cows to stimulate milk production, and it's been linked to higher risk of breast cancer in humans. And it's also not good for cows. It can cause mastitis, you know, really painful infection in cows, and then they're treated with antibiotics, which is sort of another issue in itself. So we decided we wanted to highlight that, the hypocrisy of Yoplait and General Mills yogurt having RBGH in it, but then also claiming that they really cared about breast cancer by donating, you know, this small amount of money per lid, at least. We were pretty successful with that campaign. We were very excited that after a lot of outreach and activist motivation, that General Mills decided to remove RBGH from their products. And they have a huge presence in the yogurt market. And then after that, Dannon, another really big yogurt company, decided to do the same thing. So about 2/3 of the dairy market is now RBGH free, which is a pretty significant amount, and we're really, really excited about that that victory.
Excellent. I also heard something about buckets for the cure with KFC.
Oh, yes. that's another shining example. That happened in like late spring this year. So KFC, which I guess is how it's known now. It used to be called Kentucky Fried Chicken, for those who aren't familiar. But Susan G. Komen for the Cure, which is probably the largest breast cancer education or awareness organization there is in the United States, if not the world. They partnered and basically turned the buckets that the chickens sold in pink for a period of a few weeks or something like that. And I think it was 50 cents for each bucket of chicken, the pink bucket of chicken sold, was donated to Susan G. Komen for the Cure. The big problem that we had with that, and that, you know, people just around the country were just appalled at, is that Susan G. Komen advocates very heavily for healthy lifestyle choices as being one of the best preventions for breast cancer. And while Breast Cancer Action does not advocate the same thing, because we feel it's not a fair thing for individuals to have to be solely kind of responsible for preventing breast cancer. We see it as an epidemic, and it's a public health problem, not an individual problem. But regardless of that, since Susan G. Komen advocates for having a healthy lifestyle, and, you know, certainly fried chicken should not be playing into a healthy lifestyle. We thought that, number one, was hypocritical. Number two, KFC franchises are very heavily located in communities of color that have less access to healthy food choices, like grocery stores that stock, you know, healthy fruits and vegetables. And that, again, we thought is a big problem, because it seems that, you know, in communities that already have tend to have worse health outcomes with maybe less access to health insurance and therefore perhaps, you know, better treatment or earlier treatment for disease. It seems quite unfair to be marketing this product in those communities. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we were quite upset about that, and we identified that as a problem, and motivated our members and the public at large to let the leadership of Komen and KFC know that we were pretty upset about that. And we did get some response. Unfortunately, it didn't stop the campaign, but it did attract some media attention, which we were pretty excited about. And then, you know, Komen and KFC were sort of defending their choice. So at least they heard that people were upset.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you know, like, if you buy something pink, like a bucket of pink mm-hmm. chicken or some lipstick or something like that, where is this money actually going? Do you know how much of it actually goes towards breast cancer programs and services?
That is a really, really good question, and it's something that we struggle a lot with at our organization. So, and that actually is another one of the main focuses of our Think Before You Pink campaign. We, I think when you find a pink product in a store, sometimes it's fairly clear where it's going. Where the money is going. And it'll say, you know, maybe in small print on the product itself that you say 10% of the sales will be going to such and such organization. And then, you know, the onus really is on the consumer to maybe to go to that organization's website or give them a call and find out maybe what percentage is going, what programs it's going to, et cetera. So in some ways, I think some companies do a decent job of kind of sharing that information with the public, with consumers. But there are other products where it's very unclear what percentage of the profits are going to an organization, even what organization it's going to or what research institution. We've encountered a number of products where it will just say a percentage of our proceeds will be going to breast cancer research, and then that's it. And so I think consumers are really left in the loop or in a bind there because they have no idea really where their money is going. And those are, I think, the situations where we're most critical of the products. We actually have, through our Think Before You Pink campaign, a number of questions that we encourage consumers to think about when they encounter a product so they can make an informed decision. So those include how much money goes to breast cancer programs and services, what organizations getting the money, what types of programs are being supported, and what is that company doing to make sure its products aren't contributing to the breast cancer epidemic? So, i.e., you know, it's not creating a carcinogenic product, for instance. And, you know, we encourage consumers to think about if you can't tell what the answers are, then perhaps just choosing a charity that you think is doing a good job providing services and research and then donating directly to the charity, because at least then I think you know that your full donation or at least, most of it is going to the cause that you care about and not lining the pockets of the corporation selling the pink product.
Yeah, that's a really great point. You can actually control where your money is going and ensure that it is going towards breast cancer research by doing that.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the pink ribbon earlier. I'm wondering, what is your opinion on the pink ribbon and where did that come from?
So we are not a pink ribbon organization at all. I guess let me back up. First, the interesting thing about the pink ribbon is that it's a very corporate symbol, I think, now. It's, you know, you see it on so many products worldwide, but it started as a grassroots effort by one woman. And it's an interesting and very sort of touching story. The woman who started it was a, you know, almost 70-year-old woman named Charlotte Haley. She had a number of women in her family who had breast cancer. And she created, not pink, but peach-colored ribbons that she handmade in her dining room. She put together sets of five and wrote up cards that accompanied those ribbons saying, the National Cancer Institute annual budget is $1.8 billion, but only 5% of that goes for cancer prevention. Help us wake up our legislators in America by wearing this ribbon. And then she sent them out to people. She gave them out freely, you know, in a very grassroots homegrown way. She gave them out to people in the grocery store, you know, friends and family, and encouraged them to contact their legislators with that message. And it was pretty successful. You know, Self Magazine and Estee Lauder sort of got wind of what was going on and talked to her about changing, or basically kind of adopting her tactic, her ribbons, and asking if they could take it on. And she didn't want anything to do with it, actually, because she felt it was too corporate. So the company, or Self Magazine and Estee Lauder, decided, they consulted some lawyers, and then they decided, I guess the lawyers recommended basically just choosing a different color so if it wasn't any kind of conflict there, and they chose pink. So that's, and I, you know, we've learned that it sounds like pink really came from, the color pink, that is, came about because it's kind of considered a feminine color. It's sort of a soft color and considered sort of, I don't know, soothing and that sort of thing. So that's really where that, I think, comes from.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm interested in the color pink, actually, like the use of the color pink for, in terms of the breast cancer movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because you're right, it's typically a feminine color, a soft color. Is there anything more that you would be able to say in terms of the choice of pink and the way in which everything is kind of drowned in pink in terms of breast cancer awareness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things there. One of them is that, you know, like I said, pink is definitely associated with being a very feminine color. You know, I mean, it goes down to when people are buying baby clothes, they tend to buy pink for girls, blue for boys, and you don't really see necessarily a lot of crossover in that way. And then it's sort of, it's a color, I think, throughout girls' lives that they're just sort of directed to or associated with. I mean, if you walk down the aisle of a toy store in sort of the, you know, quote-unquote girls' section, it's just drowned in pink. So I think that, you know, girls are sort of maybe influenced by that throughout their lives, that pink is a girly or feminine color. And I think it's interesting that breast cancer, this horrible disease, that is in no shape or form comforting, you know, soft, nurturing, or anything, any of those sort of adjectives that could be associated with the color pink, is sort of relegated to that color. And we, you know, breast construction very, you know, consciously does not use the color because we think it's a little bit, it takes away from the seriousness of the disease. It sort of plays down that it's a deadly disease for many women, and it is a horrible disease to contend with when you're fighting, you know, for your life, when you're going through chemotherapy, when you're going through whatever treatment you are. It sort of, I think it takes away from that. I think it makes people on the outside think that it's just something that women need to deal with quietly, that it's an individual thing, that it's sort of soft, and it has to do with women's breasts, which is, you know, another issue in itself. And so, you know, we Breast Cancer Action has certainly not ever identified with being a pink activist organization, very, you know, very purposely.
Interesting. I've noted that a lot of people would argue that these pink campaigns, you know, maybe there's not that much money going into breast cancer research, or but people will argue that this pink washing will at least raise awareness and say that it's positive because at least people are becoming aware of breast cancer. And I'm wondering, do you think, is awareness enough? Is it actually helpful for people simply to be aware, or does it really just make people think that they're doing enough by buying these pink products and wearing a ribbon? I mean, in this context, do you think awareness could possibly be doing more harm than good?
I think those are excellent questions, and I would argue that, you know, awareness is not enough. And I think if you went into a room and asked just generally to the people in there, how many of you are not aware of breast cancer? I don't think a hand would go up. I think everybody now is aware of breast cancer. It has touched so many people's lives that I think virtually everybody has, you know, knows of somebody in their lives who's been affected by it, even if not directly. And I think that, as you said, I think that the awareness campaigns are taking away from what really, the work that really needs to be done, which is some serious action. You know, things need, that need to be done include having stricter chemical regulation policies, so that we are not, people are not involuntarily exposed to toxic chemicals in our environments that contribute to, that are carcinogenic, that contribute to cancer. We also need to have stricter regulations that, that enforce that cosmetics should not have anything in them that's harmful to our bodies. You know, things like that need to happen, and that's what Breast Cancer Action has really focused on in the 20 years since we were founded. We've focused on things like that and trying to eliminate sort of the pink washing that has occurred of around the movement, that we really need to look at the causes of breast cancer, and we need to stop it before it starts.
Exactly. So, wrapping up, I wonder, you mentioned before that people can donate directly to charities. Is there anything else that you can suggest for people if they actually do want to do something to create change within the breast cancer movement and help to end the breast cancer epidemic?
Yeah, definitely. I would encourage anybody who's interested in learning more about what we do to join us. You can go to our website, which is bcaction.org. You can sign up for our news e-alerts, and we provide a lot of information about news in the breast cancer world. And then we do a lot of advocacy work. We try to advocate for new federal policies about the Safe Cosmetics Act. This is in the United States specifically, but it's a worldwide issue. There's also the Toxic Chemicals Safety Act. And then we also encourage people to visit some of our partner organizations, like the Pesticide Action Network, the Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, that does a lot of work around environmental injustices, to learn more about how to help create systemic change. And I think just being aware that there are organizations like us and like those other organizations that are trying to do some work on a really systemic level. And keeping that in mind when you are looking for an organization with which to take action.
Great. Thank you so much for talking with us this morning. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
It was a pleasure. I'm so glad that you're doing this work. It's really important, and I'm really happy that we were able to share that with our audience this morning.
Well, thank you so much. I was really excited to talk to you and to be on the show. I think what you guys are doing is awesome. So thank you again for having us.
Alrighty. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
You're listening to The F Word on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM. That was an interview with Kim Irish, who is in San Francisco. She is the program director at Breast Cancer Action. Please go to their website. They have some amazing, amazing information there. They're doing really great work. Their website is www.bcaction.org. And off that website, you can check out their project Think Before You Pink, or go to www.thinkbeforeyoupink.org. We are going to play a piece that Ariana worked on for us to follow up on this awareness idea that is big in the breast cancer movement.
I've been thinking about the concept of awareness and how everyone wants us to be aware of breast cancer. Everyone is raising awareness, and commercials tell us that partial proceeds from products go toward breast cancer awareness. Awareness. Awareness? What does that even mean? According to the Canadian Cancer Society, breast cancer is the most common cancer among Canadian women, excluding non-melanoma skin cancer, and in 2010, an estimated 23,200 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer, and 5,300 will die of it. I'd say we have a pretty good awareness of breast cancer. It happens. But why does it happen? That's the part that continues to be shrouded in pink, pink mystery. If, as the Canadian Cancer Society claims, 1 in 9 women is expected to develop breast cancer during her lifetime, and 1 in 28 will die of it, then why are we not desperately trying to stop that? Why are we waiting to cure it once it's happened? Finding the Cure is a big pink party where you get to run and shop and mail in yogurt lids, or at least until the $80,000 Yoplait fundraising cap is reached. But prevention is an individual woman's responsibility not to fail. Shame on you for not eating the right amount of fruits and vegetables. Shame on you for not getting checked all the time. Shame on you for living in a culture where corporations that sell you toxic chemicals in your products are raising money for the cure through your purchases. According to Samantha King, professor at Queen's University and author of Pink Ribbons, Incorporated, companies like Avon, which has a global breast cancer awareness campaign, use chemical preservatives called parabens in their cosmetics, along with other ingredients that have been linked to cancer. She says the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation is the biggest recipient of funds from cause-related marketing in Canada, and they spend only a very small amount on researching the primary causes of breast cancer. They make direct grants, but the major filter for their money is the Canadian Breast Cancer Research Alliance. And the Alliance allocates just 17.7% of its budget to prevention and risk factors combined. Femtoxic.com, a project of Canadian Cancer Action Montreal and Girls Action Foundation, is running a campaign urging Avon to address the problem of potentially harmful chemicals in their cosmetics and replace them with safe alternatives. The Campaign for Safe Cosmetics created a compact for safe cosmetics that companies are asked to sign. They hope to improve the safety of cosmetics and personal care products and to provide better information about product ingredients so consumers can make informed decisions about the products they buy. Avon has refused to sign the compact for safe cosmetics. Femtoxic.com expresses a concern about several companies' refusals to become signatories to the Compact for Safe Cosmetics, while simultaneously launching pink ribbon campaigns to raise awareness about breast cancer. Maybe it's time to decide what exactly about breast cancer we should be aware of.
You are listening to The F Word, and we are coming to the end of our show. We've been talking about breast cancer and cause marketing and pink washing and everything that kind of goes along with it. We just wrapped up Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which was October. So now the barrage of pink will fade, I guess, but it never totally goes away. And we want to talk briefly, kind of all of us in the studio, about some of the campaigns that we've seen and some of our reactions to them. One that comes to mind for me is a Facebook campaign that was launched, I think, in the late summer, and it was people were encouraged to change their status to say where they like to put their purse, but it's a very coy and suggestive and vague statement in which you would change your status to I like it on the floor, or I like it on the table, or closet, or bed, or whatever. And I think the point of it was to create awareness around breast cancer, but I think it's very confusing and highly sexual. And
yeah, I mean, obviously, people are going to assume, first of all, if they don't know that you're creating awareness around breast cancer, because how would you know based on where you like to put your purse? Or it's not clear that's what you're talking about anyway, where you want to put your purse. The assumption is that you're talking about something sexy, and I don't know what does that have to do with breast cancer.
I think that's the overarching theme that we keep seeing, is that we're taking something that is, you know, fundamental to a woman's anatomy and is vulnerable to this illness, but is also so sexualized that people are incapable about thinking about or talking about or looking at or conceptualizing breasts outside of the context of sexiness, and that, you know, again, the idea that, like, breast cancer in itself is devastating because it's affecting, like, something like a male sex object rather than, like, one part of a woman's body. Like, we don't see sexualization around lung cancer. We don't see sexualization around, you know, cirrhosis of the liver. Like, there's something that we need to keep naming, and it's like, and I guess it's kind of like, you know, we expect, I guess, like this sort of male gaze of, you know, breasts are fun and they're a novelty, but that women are getting on board with it now too, wearing the, like, I love Tatas t-shirts, and it's like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, save the tatas. It's, and you know, there's so many ads. Like, I think there was some kind of ad for a booby ball or something like that, and it's this woman strutting around in a bikini, and the camera pans down her body and focuses on her breasts, her large breasts, and it's a super sexed up ad. And you know, like, along the point of what you were talking about, Leslie, we're not doing this with colon cancer or ovarian cancer. You know, is it like we as a society, as a Western society, can only care about something if we can sexualize it and objectify it? I mean, what other women's issue are we coming together for in this way?
Mm-hmm. I think it really trivializes cancer in a lot of ways. Like, it just, all you see, when you think of cancer, you think of breast cancer, you think of women, and maybe some of them don't have hair, or they have they'll have a t-shirt that says survivor or something, they're running for the cure, they're all wearing pink, they're all happy, they're having a good time, but the realities of cancer are that some people do die from breast cancer. Of other types of cancers, the mortality rate is much higher, but I think that, you know, when I think about breast cancer, and I think about, there's so much focus on awareness, and Ariana spoke to this in her piece, but why are we not looking to think, to question why the rates of cancer are as high as they are? Why is there just this lack of, this adamant refusal at the level of government and level of health organizations to look at environmental factors, pollutants and toxins, and, I mean, just the other things, other factors that are beyond the control of the individual, and to try and focus on those and to how they're impacting cancer rates? I think that would be really important, and it's a conversation that we're not having, so.
Yeah, I also, there was an article that Barbara Ehrenreich, I hope I pronounced that properly, she wrote in Harper's back in 2001, and she was very critical of the breast cancer movement, and she pointed out that, you know, all this effort, as, you know, we mentioned this earlier, and Kim talked about it during the interview, all this effort put into pink ribbons could be better used elsewhere. But, you know, what does this mean for the feminist movement? I mean, she pointed out that whereas before we may have marched and protested, and now what do we do? Like, what are we banding together for? We'll walk for the cure? I mean, and in terms of women's issues, I mean, there's other women's issues that are just as, if not more, harmful to women. Violence against women, rape, trafficking, and nobody's talking about that. There's no marketing. There's no huge awareness campaign to the same level that the breast cancer awareness campaign is.
It's a campaign that can't be sexualized.
Exactly.
And I think, I mean, this is a whole other conversation itself, and we unfortunately don't have time for that, but that's a conversation to be had, is the amount of blame we put on women who are, you know, who contract sexually transmitted mm-hmm. diseases, or who need abortions, or who are in abusive relationships. There's always a level of detachment, because you can always rationalize a level of woman blame, and if people can do that, then they don't want to be aligned with it, and cancer's kind of that one safe space, again, to sort of say something about women's issues without actually naming any of the systemic inequalities that are leading to that. And I was trying to reference that sort of in the beginning too, and I'm glad you brought it up again, but that idea that we get to pick and choose what women's issues we want to get on board on based on how much sympathy we're willing to allot the survivor of it. You know, and certain issues don't do that. But I think we're out of time.
Yes, so you have been listening to The F Word on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. And we discussed this morning breast cancer awareness campaigns, pinkwashing, and all the politics around Vancouver, breast cancer awareness.